News of the Church. St. Louis Temple Dedicated. On 1 June 1997, President Gordon B. Hinckley presided over the first dedicatory session of the St. Louis, Missouri Temple, the Church's 50th operating temple and the first temple in Missouri. The session was the first of 19 dedicatory sessions scheduled during the week of 1 through 5 June. The dedicatory session was preceded by an 8 a.m. cornerstone ceremony at which President Hinckley troweled mortar into the groove around the stone. He was followed by Elders L. Tom Perry and David B. Haight of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, Elder Hugh W. Pinnock of the 70, Marjorie Hinckley, President Hinckley's wife, and St. Louis Temple President Menlo F. Smith and his counselors, Boyd Schenck and K. Don Oscarson. 12 children and 20 adults attending the Cornerstone event also participated. A choir of 54 single adults gathered from the four metropolitan stakes, St. Louis, Missouri, St. Louis, Missouri North, St. Louis, Missouri South, and O'Fallon, Illinois, participated in the Cornerstone ceremony. Because of limited parking space, attendance at the ceremony was limited to choir members, their families, and media representatives. The ceremony was covered by several local television stations. President Hinckley and others then returned to the temple for the commencement of the first session of the dedication. A 25-person choir made up of members of the Bloomington, Indiana stake provided music for the opening session. An estimated 23,100 church members attended the dedicatory sessions. Gene Matthews, Director of Public Affairs for the St. Louis region, attended the second session. She said, "The session was so moving and filled with the Spirit, people were openly weeping." Prior to the dedication, an open house for the temple was held, 26 April through 24 May. Nearly 260,000 people toured the new temple. As soon as people found out they could come, we were inundated with calls from people wanting more details, said Sister Matthews. Mel Carnahan, the governor of Missouri, and 12 family members toured the facility on the first day of the open house. Several state senators and government officials came as well. The open house was scheduled to conclude on 17 May, but so many people were interested in attending that the dates were extended an additional week. Community awareness about such an event has not been so great since the World Series was held here in 1985, notes Sister Matthews. In one day, we had 15,000 people come. The reaction of those that came was wonderful. Time and time again, we heard visitors comment on the remarkable feeling in the temple. One woman said she had never felt such a feeling of peace ever before in any building. In December 1990, the First Presidency announced plans to build the St. Louis Temple. On 30 October 1993, President Hinckley presided in the groundbreaking for the temple. It is approximately 60,000 square feet and located in the city of Town and Country, 20 miles west of St. Louis, Missouri. Aaronic Priesthood Satellite Fireside. We are remembering the coming of the Mormon pioneers into the Salt Lake Valley a century and a half ago, said President Gordon B. Hinckley in the Aaronic Priesthood Sesquicentennial Fireside, held on 18 May 1997 in the Tabernacle on Temple Square. The fireside was broadcast to more than 3,000 meeting houses in the United States, Canada, Puerto Rico, Haiti, Jamaica, and the Dominican Republic. President Hinckley talked about the divine authority through which the Aaronic Priesthood is conferred. I hope you have some understanding of it. I hope you have great appreciation for it. I hope that you pause and think once in a while of the precious gift you have received through the mercy of our Father in heaven. He also advised the young men about the problems they face today. They are different from those faced by the young men of 150 years ago, he said, but they are just as real, and in many respects far more deadly. He told the youth to shun drugs, alcohol, pornography, filthy and sleazy talk, taking the Lord's name in vain, immorality, and gangs. Rise above all of these things. Stand firmly against them. Demonstrate that this generation can handle its problems as well as earlier generations handled their problems. In his remarks, Elder Jeffrey R. Holland of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles said, "The faithful saints who have gone before have given us our collective heritage. We gain much from remembering the courage, the devotion, the dedication which is required in every land and in every age in order to be a faithful member of the Church and Kingdom of God." Elder Holland related an incident in the life of Elder Reed Smoot, who in 1903, as a young member of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, was elected to the United States Senate from the newest state in the Union, Utah. Elder Smoot served in the Senate for 30 years. He was offered the nomination for President of the United States on the Republican ticket on two separate occasions if he would deny his faith. Elder Smoot said, "If I had to make my choice between being a deacon in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or being the President of the United States, I would be a deacon. I, too, would rather hold the Aaronic priesthood than hold the highest public office in the land," concluded Elder Holland. Quite often, when we hear stories of valiant pioneer youth, or when local stories of achievement are told, some young men doubt that they could personally achieve such a thing, said Elder Jack H. Gosland of the Presidency of the 70. "I testify to you that by the virtue of the priesthood you hold, you have access to the same blessings that have helped others accomplish mighty feats." Youth should not doubt that they are part of a royal generation, he continued. Instead, they should recognize their parents and church leaders as pioneers who can teach them how to stay on the right path. "You do have special things to do, my young brethren," said Elder Gosland. "Listen to those who have gone before you and learn from their experiences. Then blaze the trail and remember that others will follow you." Bishop H. David Burton, presiding bishop, praised our Aaronic priesthood pioneers for their commitment to priesthood service. "Many young people of Aaronic priesthood age were part of the nearly 70,000 who made a difficult journey to the Salt Lake Valley." He shared the stories of two young men who traveled across the plains despite difficult circumstances and worked to bring hundreds of other saints safely to Zion. Appointments. The First Presidency has announced new directors of hosting for the church. M. Dale and Elaine W. Ensign will oversee hosting of visitors to the Church Office Building and Joseph Smith Memorial Building. They will also conduct hospitality programs for visiting dignitaries and organizations holding conferences in Salt Lake City. In addition, a new director has been called for the Oakland Temple Visitor Center. Andrew Iring Kimball of Sandy, Utah, will preside over the Visitor Center. He will be accompanied by his wife, M. Phyllis Jones Kimball. President Hinckley visits New Zealand, Australia, and Mexico. During 10 through 18 May, President Gordon B. Hinckley traveled to the land Down Under, the first visit in 21 years by a church president to the area. Accompanying President Hinckley on the trip were his wife, Marjorie, Elder Henry B. Iring of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, and his wife, Kathleen, Elder Bruce C. Hafen of the 70, first counselor in the Pacific Area Presidency, and his wife, Marie, and Sister Virginia H. Pierce, first counselor in the General Young Women Presidency. All spoke at various times during the numerous meetings. Hamilton, New Zealand. Following his arrival on Saturday, 10 May, President Hinckley attended the last portion of a priesthood leadership meeting for brethren from 13 stakes and 5 districts in Hamilton and southern parts of the country. The next day, 9,700 members attended two sessions of the Hamilton New Zealand Regional Conference. "To be living in this time of the world is a marvelous thing," said President Hinckley in both sessions. "When I was born in 1910, a man's average lifespan was 50 years. Today it is 75 years. Beyond this, there's the marvelous blessing of the restored gospel. God has spoken again. This church is a miracle. It's the greatest success story." "The church is now in over 160 nations, he continued. "We build 375 buildings each year. We have more than 50,000 missionaries, and the Family History Program draws the interest of people from all over the world. These are some of the consequences of the early pioneers' efforts. The days of persecution are behind us, and we live in an era of peace when we are looked up to and respected by those who know us." Auckland, New Zealand. For the remainder of President Hinckley's visit to the South Pacific, firesides were conducted in each city, including one in Auckland on 10 May, where 12,000 members from 12 stakes, undeterred by intermittent showers and a blustery wind, came to hear him speak. In addressing some of his remarks to young people, he said, "You are the future of the church in New Zealand. You must live the gospel. You must do what is right. You young men, I emphasize strongly that it is your obligation and opportunity to go forth and serve as missionaries." He encouraged the youth to follow the five B's: be true, be smart, be humble, be clean, be prayerful. The leadership of the church in New Zealand will soon be the responsibility of you young people. You must be prepared, for the gospel requires a righteous generation. With the five B's, there is no need for anyone to be so close to the edge as to jeopardize one's spiritual progress. Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. On 11 May, the church leader arrived in Australia, where almost 7,000 members gathered to hear him speak in Melbourne. The next morning, an ABC Radio National Network breakfast program broadcast in an excerpt from the meeting, where President Hinckley said, "I know that God lives, and you know that God lives. That's the strength of this church. Its strength doesn't lie in all the meeting houses across the world. It doesn't lie in the temples. It does not lie on the BYU campus. It lies in the hearts of the people, the personal conviction that God, our eternal Father, lives, and that Jesus is the Christ." The next morning, prior to his departure for Adelaide, President Hinckley was interviewed by a journalist for the Sydney Morning Herald. The journalist, who had attended the Melbourne fireside in preparation for the interview, wrote two feature articles on the church leader's visit. Adelaide, South Australia. Next, President Hinckley traveled to Adelaide, where 2,800 members from three stakes who had taken off time from work or school gathered to hear him speak on 13 May. To these members, the church leader spoke of faith and temple work. "I hope every man in this congregation has taken his wife to the house of the Lord. Work for the temple and the sealing ordinances," he said. "Take your companion and your children if you can, there to be joined under a covenant that time cannot destroy and death cannot break." Perth, Western Australia. Approximately 3,800 members listened to President Hinckley speak at his next stop in Perth, the first recorded visit of a church president to the area. President Hinckley encouraged those in attendance to strengthen their families and hold regular family home evening. "It is very important what you do," he said. "You may be the only Latter-day Saints others know, and they form a judgment of this work as to what you say and do." Sydney, New South Wales, Australia. On Wednesday, 14 May, members from eight stakes and four districts met in Sydney to hear the church leader. Referring to the hymn, "Come, Come Ye Saints," President Hinckley spoke about the great legacy that church members have as a result of the sacrifices of the pioneers. "That great hymn," he said, "is as applicable to us today, to the saints all across the world, as it was to those who made that great and treacherous journey. None of us today can really appreciate what they went through." What a marvelous thing it is, my brethren and sisters, to have such a great legacy. Now those days are past. There is no more serious persecution. There is no more gathering to Zion. Not too many years ago, more than half of the church membership lived in Utah. Now, just 17% of the membership of the church lives in that state. We've expanded over this earth, and we are helping to bring blessings to the people of those nations. While in Sydney, President Hinckley was the principal speaker at a ceremony at the Australian National Maritime Museum, where personal diaries and records held by the church's archive department were presented as a loan to the museum by the church. The records were associated with two immigrant voyages of the ship Julia Ann from New South Wales to American soil in the 1850s as a part of the Mormon pioneer exodus. Immediately following the presentation at the National Maritime Museum, President Hinckley was interviewed on a live nationwide telecast of the Nine Television Network's breakfast program, The Today Show. Then, after a ferry ride across Sydney Harbor, he was interviewed extensively for ABC TV's Compass television program. The interview will be telecast nationally in August. President Hinckley then attended a meeting with 400 missionaries from the Australia Sydney South and North missions. His remarks were recorded by the Seven Television Network's Witness Current Affairs program for a feature story on the missionary effort of the church, which aired nationally in late May. Brisbane, Queensland, Australia. In his final stop on this vigorous trip to the Pacific, President Hinckley spoke on 15 May in Brisbane to 8,200 members from six stakes and four districts. The day was stormy, and in an earlier meeting with the full-time missionaries, President Hinckley had requested those in attendance to remember the elements in their prayers. Those prayers were answered. A balmy evening greeted the members attending, with rain appearing again shortly after the meeting finished. Featured at the Brisbane meeting were giant video screens on either side of the podium, signing for the hearing impaired, and translation facilities for members speaking Samoan, Tongan, Spanish, Mandarin, and Korean. VIP guests at the meeting included ministers and members of the Queensland Parliament, educational leaders, executives of the Australian Family Association, and local government leaders. In his address, President Hinckley said reporters continually ask him, "Why is it that you're growing when some of the other churches are fading?" His answer, "We're growing because this church offers a solid anchor of faith and doctrine and performance in a world of shifting values. The family is falling apart across the world, but it is not falling apart in this church. We're growing because this church expects things of its members. It is a demanding thing, but people respond to that kind of doctrine. They want something solid and affirmative to which they can tie their lives, and they find it in this church." President Hinckley told the gathering, "You ought to be the very best people in all the world because you are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You've taken upon yourselves the name of the Lord. You have covenanted to keep His commandments. He has said that He will bless you and that His Spirit will be with you if you do so." Alan Wakely, Pacific Area Director of Public Affairs, Sydney, Australia. Colonia Juarez, Mexico. To mark the 100th anniversary of the church's Juarez Academy, President Hinckley addressed an audience of about 5,000 at the Academy's commencement ceremony on Friday, 6 June 1997. After his address, he rededicated a number of Academy buildings that had been recently renovated. In his commencement talk, President Hinckley counseled the school's graduates to keep the faith. "No knowledge is of greater worth than the knowledge you have gained here in the things of the Spirit," he said. "I challenge you to never forget that the schooling of the Spirit is as important, if not more so, than the schooling of the mind." President Hinckley also urged graduates to serve the Lord, plan for and nourish a good marriage and home, and continue to pursue knowledge. The day before the commencement ceremony, on Thursday, 5 June 1997, President Hinckley spoke at a fireside for members of the Colonia Juarez and Colonia Dublon Mexico Stakes. About 5,500 people were in attendance. Policies and announcements. The following First Presidency letter of 15 May 1997 was sent to stake presidents and bishops to be read in sacrament meeting. Helping new members. We are deeply concerned about many of our brothers and sisters of all ages who have received a testimony of the gospel of Jesus Christ, but have not felt the sustaining warmth of fellowship among the saints. Too many are not receiving the blessings of the priesthood and the covenant promises of the temple. Every new member needs three things: a friend, a responsibility, and spiritual nourishment through gospel study. All members are responsible to fellowship those who are new and to help them feel the strength of the gospel. Each new member should feel the influence of loving and caring friends within the church. The personal influence of church members is one of the most powerful factors in helping new members achieve an enduring conversion and continued activity in the church. This is a work for everyone. We ask each member, please help in this undertaking. Your friendly ways are needed. Your sense of responsibility is needed. Priesthood quorum and auxiliary leaders should include new members in the planning and carrying out of activities, giving them opportunities to work with and serve one another. Our constant, unwavering objective must be to assist our Father in heaven in His work and glory, to bring to pass the immortality and eternal life of man. May each of us be blessed to fulfill this great and sacred trust. New counselors in Young Men Presidency. The First Presidency has announced the assignment of Elder Vaughn J. Featherstone of the 70 as President of the Pacific Area and his release as First Counselor in the Young Men General Presidency. Succeeding him as First Counselor in the Young Men Presidency is Elder F. David Stanley, who previously served as Second Counselor. Called as Second Counselor is Elder Robert K. Dellenbach. Both are members of the 70. Elder Stanley and Dellenbach will serve as counselors to Elder Jack H. Gosland of the Presidency of the 70, who has served as General President of the Young Men since October 1990. New Ricks College President announced. The First Presidency has announced the appointment of Dr. David A. Bednar of Fayetteville, Arkansas, as President of Ricks College in Rexburg, Idaho. Brother Bednar, 44, has been a business management professor at the University of Arkansas. He succeeds President Stephen D. Bennion, who recently accepted the presidency of Southern Utah University in Cedar City, Utah. Brother Bednar began his new responsibilities on 1 July, 1997. I am humbled, overwhelmed, and incredibly excited about this new opportunity, said Brother Bednar. The mission at Ricks College is clear-cut, to foster faith in the Savior, build testimonies, and provide a quality education. My goal is to continue to enhance the effectiveness with which we achieve that mission. A native of San Leandro, California, Brother Bednar earned bachelor's and master's degrees from Brigham Young University and a Ph.D. from Purdue University. After graduation, he taught at the University of Arkansas for 4 years and then taught 2 years at Texas Tech University before returning to the U of A. While at the University of Arkansas, he received the College of Business Administration's Outstanding Teacher Award twice and was honored as the Outstanding Faculty Member of the University. He has authored several books on organizational behavior. At the time he was chosen as the new Ricks College President, Brother Bednar was serving as an Area Authority 70 in the North America Southwest area. He is a former bishop and stake president. He and his wife, Susan K. Robinson Bednar, have 3 sons. Deseret News Building Dedicated. All 3 members of the First Presidency participated in the dedication of the new Deseret News facility, a 9-story Salt Lake City building housing the 147-year-old church-owned daily newspaper. Regarding the Deseret News and the new facility, President Hinckley said, "With this new building and under new leadership, it faces the future with high confidence to win and hold a strong and challenging leadership. The past is not good enough. The present is not good enough. Constant improvement must be its goal for the future. Truth without favor must be its watchword. Able reporting and editing. Fearless editorial advocacy. Interesting features." President Thomas S. Monson, first counselor in the First Presidency, offered the dedicatory prayer. He has been associated with the newspaper for 49 years in a variety of positions, including 19 years as chairman of the board of directors. In harmony with our belief that the U.S. Constitution is an inspired document and that America has a special mission, the Deseret News will defend and promote the principles of the Constitution and the great freedoms for which the nation stands, he said. President Faust, second counselor in the First Presidency, has also served on the newspaper's board of directors. "This building makes a statement about the future of the Deseret News and the confidence we have in that future," he said. "Of course, everything is changing in the communications world. We will adapt, and we will change with it," he said. Members assist with flood, tornado cleanup. Hundreds of members in the Midwestern United States and Texas have volunteered their time in cleanup efforts after terrible tornadoes and flooding destroyed homes and businesses in both areas. Austin, Texas. On Tuesday, 27 May, 6 tornadoes roared through 4 counties in Texas, leaving unidentifiable debris where just a few minutes before homes and businesses had stood. The worst tornado hit in Jarrell, a small community of less than 1,000 people. An estimated 27 people were killed. Howard Nicholas, president of the Austin, Texas state, said that many members volunteered to help those affected by the tornadoes. None of the church members in the stake were injured, but 5 members' homes sustained damage and 1 will have to be rebuilt. Grant Almond, bishop of the Cedar Park ward, organized members to help clean up. Cedar Park lies about 5 miles northwest of Austin and was hit by a tornado at around 4 p.m. 30 or 40 minutes after the tornado hit, we had all of the members accounted for in the immediate area, Bishop Almond said. We immediately went over to help those who were affected. Members brought lanterns and cooking stoves and provided child care for those who needed to repair their houses and clean up debris. Keith and Vivian Grosskost, members of the Cedar Park ward, sought shelter in a ground-level bathroom and a closet. My wife and a neighbor girl went into a bathroom, and I went into a closet with the dog, said Brother Grosskost. The whole time I just remember feeling calm, and I knew everything would be all right, said Sister Grosskost. Later, when I recalled the experience to someone, I realized that it was the Comforter who had brought me that feeling. The Grosskost house sustained some damage. Other houses nearby were completely destroyed. We had approximately 100 ward members out helping the next day, said Bishop Almond. Members came and helped the Grosskost and their neighbors clean up. Ward members were also encouraged to help the Red Cross and other relief organizations. Other members of the Cedar Park ward were affected. Mike and Kelly Smith's two youngest sons were home with Bishop Almond's 14-year-old son, David. The Cedar Park ward were affected. Mike and Kelly Smith's two youngest sons were home with Bishop Almond's 14-year-old son, David, when the tornado hit. The first thing the three boys did was pray. David said they knew everything would be all right after that, said Brother Smith. Members from the ward helped the Smiths find a rental home and helped them move. They also brought meals, took care of the children, and offered other assistance. I cannot explain how I feel about the compassionate service and kindness of the people that helped us, says Sister Smith. I am just so grateful. I'm also grateful to Heavenly Father. I know that He cares about us and sees us as individuals. We know the Lord protected our children. Midwest flooding. Spring flooding in the Midwest Red River Valley has brought many opportunities for members around the country to serve. Busload after busload of members has traveled hundreds of miles to aid the flood victims. The valley, reaching over 200 miles from the north-flowing Red River headwaters at Wahpeton, North Dakota, to Lake Winnipeg in Manitoba, Canada, includes major population centers at Wahpeton, Fargo, and Grand Forks, North Dakota, and their twin cities across the river in Minnesota. Many of the flood victims have been assisted directly or indirectly by the church, either through truckloads of food and supplies the church has distributed or through LDS volunteer labor. In the Grand Forks Second Ward, Bishop Carl Johnson reported that within his ward boundaries, 300 non-member households and businesses have been served by members. Members from Minnesota, Montana, Colorado, and North Dakota have come to help, he said. Early Saturday morning, 3 May, 100 members of the Anoka, Minnesota stake traveled 4 hours one way on buses to Wahpeton, North Dakota, and its twin town of Breckenridge, Minnesota, to help dismantle sandbag dikes and to help residents remove heavy appliances and carpeting from flooded basements. It was so wonderful that they came, said Murel Wanek, a non-member. The Waneks, a retired couple, had been trying to get the refrigerator out of the basement by themselves. 5 members helped them move the refrigerator, washer, dryer, freezer, beds, and other furniture. On 10 May, more members from the Anoka stake returned, joining 400 members from the Minneapolis and St. Paul stakes. The volunteers arrived in Grand Forks at 11 a.m. after a 5-hour drive. They worked until 7 p.m. and then boarded the buses to go home. LDS Social Services Minnesota Agency Director Glenn Grigla, headquartered in Minneapolis, traveled on one of the buses. He explained that some volunteers drove an hour and a half to get to the buses, which left at 4:30 a.m. The buses were packed. When the members arrived in Grand Forks, they worked with flood disaster officials to determine where the need for help was greatest. The help coming from members has been graciously received. After assisting Bishop Johnson in his home, Brother Grigla helped the bishop's neighbors. One neighbor mentioned that his father-in-law needed help, but said the retired gentleman would never ask for assistance. Members went to the home and got everything out of the basement, including cabinets, sinks, and a cast-iron bathtub, said Brother Grigla. We went in and wiped the whole basement out. He was so grateful. The gentleman became choked up as the members left. I want you to know I'll never forget you guys, he told us. In the Winnipeg, Manitoba stake, members have been assisting the Salvation Army to sort and distribute clothing donated by organizations and families nationwide to those whose homes were flooded. The missionaries sang primary songs as they sandbagged people's homes, Brother Moore said. Other workers shed a few tears as they heard the singing. One woman has attended church for 3 Sundays and started investigating the church because of her experiences with the missionaries on the sandbag lines. PBS to Air Mormon Trail documentary. The arrival of Latter-day Saint pioneers in the Salt Lake Valley 150 years ago will be memorialized in a documentary look at the Mormon Trail to be broadcast on public broadcasting system stations across the United States on 10 August. The documentary Trail of Hope, The Story of the Mormon Trail, is a two-hour look at the trail's place in U.S. history. The program tells stories of some of the 70,000 Latter-day Saints who followed the 1,300-mile trail across the Great Plains in their quest for religious freedom. The pioneer story is told through poignant first-hand accounts from diaries and journals kept by some of the pioneers. The documentary features period photographs, sketches, and artwork, as well as reenactments of selected events. It not only focuses on the trail's place in history, but also looks at the story of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from its beginnings. Filming took place in England, New York, Illinois, Missouri, Iowa, Nebraska, Wyoming, and Utah. Sponsored by KUED, the PBS television station associated with the University of Utah in Salt Lake City, Trail of Hope will premiere nationally on 10 August at 8 p.m. Mountain and Central Times and 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Times. It was produced and directed by Lee B. Groberg. Education Week to be broadcast to stake centers. To extend educational opportunities to more church members, the Church Educational System and Brigham Young University will broadcast portions of the university's Campus Education Week program during 19 through 22 August. These sessions will be broadcast over the church satellite system to stake centers in the United States, Canada, and the Caribbean, and will also be seen on KBYU-TV. Five sessions from each day's presentations, Tuesday through Friday, will be broadcast over the satellite system. For further information, write to CES Continuing Education Program, 278 HCEB, Brigham Young University, Provo, Utah, 84602-1507, or call 1-801-378-2087. End of News of the Church.